Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
In much less detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Here are your hosts.
That's right. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. We are live. It is Tuesday, October 24th, 2017. I am Jay. Once again, Dre will be around shortly, I hope. He texted me, told me to get the show started again. So here we are, recapping week 7 in the NFL. Another wacky, wild week. Just when we think we've got things figured out, we get weeks like these to tell us that we don't know anything. This is the show that goes to 11, Central Time, that is. Still waiting for Dre to pop back up here. Phone keeps buzzing at me. Andre saying, go without me, go without me. Where to start in this wacky wild week? I mean, we had shutouts. We had, I believe, 8 teams this week that scored less than 10 points. And with all the rules that say we should be dictating 35-31 games and offense up and down the field, we watched a whole bunch of teams lay a whole bunch of dirty, rotten eggs. Not a very good week. Overall, it was a bit painful to watch. Quite a few ugly games. We watched a Bears team beat the Panthers without scoring an offensive touchdown with a quarterback that went full on Chris Wanky, threw 7 passes for the whole game. They still won the game. We had the Falcons in the fog and Julio Jones saying that the fans were making the fog. There must have been fog machines the fans had in the parking lot. It's just crazy week. Dre, what do you make of it?
Am I being heard?
Oh, you're here.
No good.
There's no problems when you seem to be getting in this way.
This might have to be the way we do it for the time being. I don't know what is going on. Every time I log on to the show before the show starts, I can't be heard. I let you in, and then I let you in. I start talking. You say nothing, which means you can't hear me at all. And this has been a problem for the last couple of weeks now, and I'm going to have to do something to fix it.
Well, tonight at least I started talking to you in the pre-show portion to let you know that I couldn't hear a word you were saying.
Yes.
Because usually you let me in, I hear everything change, the audio changes going from waiting to. Am I still here?
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Okay. All of a sudden it said I just got the message on my screen that said I just dropped from the show, but I'm still here.
Well, it's because I hung up the show from the official page, which I didn't think was a problem.
Okay.
I think we're still recording.
Well, I'm talking to you, and you're talking to me, and I can hear you. And we'll go with it.
Okay. Oh, well, it does say you are not connected, but I think we're still connected. I think we're good. All I did was drop the official host line, but I'm still on it, on the guest. We're both on the guest line. But
yes.
I think that's good.
So. It seems to be good enough. It's still giving me the host. It says at the top, host disconnected, but it still gives me all of the end episode and all the usual stuff. So
yep. We'll see. The same screen.
This is, this is always interesting. We've been doing this for, 5 years, and it never ceases to be an interesting experience, connecting and staying connected. And I remember we went through the whole thing with Skype for a while, where that was the rock steady way to connect, and then they just completely dropped all the Snipe connection. So, okay.
I mean, the only reason I dropped the main line was because I was getting the double feed of myself in my ears.
Oh.
But what I'm going to do is I lost the ability to do the switchboard at all. So what I'm going to do is dial up again and mute myself on the guest line, and then we'll see if I'll be able to be heard on the regular line like I'm supposed to. So okay. Hang on.
Okay. We'll do it live. Okay. Fucking thing. We'll do it live. Right. Fuck it. Do it live! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! Fuck it! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live!
Okay. Ready?
Right. Fucking thing sucks! We'll do it live.
Okay.
Am I on?
You are live.
Well, that's good to know. Although I'm still hearing the double feed. Okay, I'm going to hang up my guest line now and stay live and see if that works.
This just keeps getting better. This is like the week of football we just watched.
Am I still on?
You are. It's funny because I'm watching you drop and connect and drop again and come back. And it's fun.
It really is. That was like the week of football that we just had. Just trial and error. Let's see if this works. Let's see if that's working. Oh, fuck it. The whole thing sucks.
Well, I've only got one question for you.
Mm.
How's it feel? Huh?
How's
it feel? Yeah. How's that feel?
That didn't taste good. That didn't feel good. Yeah, we got to find that one. Tell me how my ass tastes. That didn't taste good. That didn't feel good. That was horrible to go through. I'm sitting there just watching all of these games late go exactly the opposite of how I said they were going to go. There's any number of different directions that we can start. That Atlanta game against New England. So that's what a team looks like that it gets all those jokes told about them ever since February. Is the butt of the sports media, the sports world, all the fans, everything building back up to going into New England and having some measure of respect by playing a much better game than they did in the Super Bowl. Winning the game, that's what I predicted. That's what I locked in. Obviously, didn't happen. But just playing a better game, just having a better representation of yourself than what happened in the Super Bowl. And they didn't even do that. They actually played much worse than they did in the Super Bowl, and I'm at a loss. I mean, I know you picked New England, so you must have seen this coming somehow. I thought they'd at least have a much better showing of themselves than that.
I saw a team that has struggled to do anything consistently. They had one good game this year, and that was that game against Green Bay, a team that they've somewhat owned over their last few meetings. I mean, they beat them twice last year. They beat them pretty convincingly. So if you want to talk about having some confidence for a team coming to your building to open up your new stadium, you couldn't have teed that up any better for the Falcons than what they got on that in that week two on that Sunday night. Other than that performance, they haven't looked right. The offense isn't there. Julio Jones has scored his first touchdown of the season in week seven, and it was garbage time. Their play calling makes no sense. The going for it on the rash of fourth downs, like fourth and longs. I mean, they went for a fourth and six right before halftime when it was only 10-0 and ended up not making it, not even close. And then the Patriots go down on a half of a field and get a touchdown to put that to 17. The game was over. That was ball game right there. And
that was desperation. What was it not? Did you not see the same thing that I did, that the Falcons were feeling the pressure and felt like we have to start doing some ballsy moves and making big plays right now?
But desperation, it doesn't make for good play calling or the way to play your game. I mean, you're only losing 10-0 going into halftime. You know, punt the ball deep. If you're going to let the Patriots score on you, at least they're going to do it going, you know, 80-plus yards. You don't put yourself in that type of a situation going for it. I know they had gone for it earlier in the game on a fourth and seven, right around about the 40 yard line. I didn't like the tone that they looked. They look completely out of sorts. I don't know what to make of it. The running game is a little bit there.
I thought that I wrote down my notes. Atlanta got here to punt. Because, well, I mean, it worked. They got the first down because Matt Ryan ran for 9 yards. So it always looks great when it works. But
right.
At the time, I was like, all right, they're not here to mess around. They're not here to punt the ball. They're here to kick ass, take names, and win the game. And they finished that drive off by getting the field goal blocked.
Yeah, no, there was nothing going for them. Nothing looked like it was going to go for them. I don't even think that the Patriots played all that great. They didn't need to.
No.
Why do you need to bring your A game when the other team isn't even close to bringing that? So
that's the completely thing. The Patriots are not good. And we know they're not good. And the Falcons still couldn't compete with them. Oh, that's just terrible. That's a real big reason why I was so confident in the Falcons is that they were coming in. I said the Falcons are not what they were last year. They are certainly a notch below. But the Patriots are booty. The Patriots have been playing like ass all season, and they were ripe for the picking, so I thought. But yeah, it's more than just not playing well. It's some disconnection going on between Matt Ryan and his targets. When you can't hit Mohamed Sanu on a simple third and two, he threw wide early in the game for Sanu. He was throwing wide with a lot of his targets. Missed connections. Julio Jones had to once again go up and make a great play to get a touchdown late. But other than that, they didn't seem to be on the same page. That's really sort of terrifying if you're a Falcons fan, because if Matty Ice isn't connecting with his guys and it's just sort of hit or miss every game, whether there's going to be that offensive explosion or not, then what do you got? You're back to the same old Falcons from before last year to just kind of throw your hands in the air, and you don't know from one week to the next what you're going to get, and that's where the Falcons are right now, unfortunately, for them.
Well, it's a complete regression. Matt Ryan is putting up offensive numbers that are on par with the offensive numbers he put up in his rookie season. So he's gone all the way back. He's doing this, like, total Benjamin Button style right now. I don't know what's going on. He's
that's
living
not
his career
the
Walmart
rollback that we want. That's not good.
No. So they've got to figure this out. They've got the weapons. They're all there. Most of these guys are all the same guys offensively that were there last year. I don't know what to say. If this is just Kyle Shanahan leaving and that offense has lost its edge and Sarkisian's not connecting with these guys, or the approach isn't there. The play calling clearly wasn't there. The approach clearly wasn't there. 3-3 isn't the end of the world. I mean, you know, there's a lot of teams that are sitting around mediocre right now because most of the league is fairly mediocre right now. Yeah, so nothing, you know, we can't write anybody off. Nothing's over. You know, all you've got to do is catch some fire and catch it late, but I haven't seen anything that tells me that they're going to right the ship.
No, definitely not writing them off, but just very worried about what was one of the best teams in football, the second best team last year. And what's worse is on the defensive side, they come out so fired up and it looks like they shot their wad. They were hitting Brady early. They were all jazzed up and getting it done. And all of a sudden there's that awful interception that Brady throws. I got erased by Adrian Claiborne roughing the passer because his helmet lovingly grazed Brady on the side of his head. And, of course, you're going to get the flag for that. And it seemed like that sort of flipped it. Like, Atlanta went from aggressive and getting Brady, and here we go, we're going to kick his ass and do what we did early in the Super Bowl last year, to, okay, well, we got to back off a little bit. We got to be careful. We can't be too aggressive. We're going a little too hard now. And just that little bit of edge off, that's all it takes. Just that little bit, and then Brady settles in, gets the little – cute little jet sweep flip to Brandon Cooks for the first touchdown. And from there, it looked like he just settled in, had time, starts delivering those back shoulder throws and turned into Tom Brady all over again. That's the real killer to me, is it looked like the Falcons were on their way to, okay, the offense isn't connecting and not clicking on all cylinders like it could be, but maybe later in the game against that terrible Patriots defense, they'll start clicking. Meanwhile, our defense is getting every rep, kicking his ass and doing what we're supposed to do. Then you get that little roughing the passer flag, and it felt like everything sort of melted down from there.
Yeah, I mean, that game got thoroughly broken down on Monday. I mean, all the talking head shows, everything, all the recaps. What's wrong with the Falcons? This was, and correctly, for once in the media, they were making it more about the loss for the Falcons than anything that the Patriots did. Because everybody knows, everybody looks at the Patriots and, you know, it smells the blood in the water. It, you know, that they're not what they were. They can be had pretty much by anybody. And Atlanta basically squandered an opportunity to at least exact a measure of revenge. I mean, I know that that's what was expected of them, was to go in there and do that. But then after you see a performance like that, you're like, oh, well, what were we expecting? You know, now you can go right back to the 28-3 jokes.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's the disappointing part. Like I said, the Patriots are set up to get beat, and Atlanta just came in and punked out and just did not show up the way I thought they were going to.
Yeah. Well, you played your narrative. I was looking at what was happening on the field. The narrative wasn't going to carry that one through.
I still think that there's going to be a lot of talk about the Falcons and are they going to recover and are they going to ever get back to what they were. I still think there's a little bit of getting over the not completely getting over the Super Bowl loss, but getting past the rematch and all the hype from that. And they got the 28-3 signs in the stadium up in New England when they go in there. That part of it is sort of over. I think the Falcons, I still think there's a little bit of a bounce back by the Falcons getting past this point, getting past this game. I thought they were looking forward to this game to sort of redeeming themselves, but I still think there's an element of the game is over. The whole Patriots thing that happened last February is past them now with the rematch, and now they can sort of focus on the rest of the season.
Well, that would be good if they're able to do that. It wasn't pretty. But not pretty was the theme of the weekend, wasn't it?
God, it's some ugly football. How do you have three shutouts in the NFL when the defense can barely blow on somebody while getting a penalty? How does that happen?
And you look at two of the teams that threw those shutouts, the Jags and the Rams, and oh boy, here we go. We get to keep talking about Jaguars and Rams football. We keep wanting to not do that, or keep expecting the other shoe to drop with those teams, and then both of them go out and pitch shutouts. The Rams go out and break Carson Palmer's arm, of course, on a pick. I mean,
of course,
who breaks
Santa
Claus's arm?
Couldn't go out any other way.
Who breaks Santa Claus's arm? That's what I want to know. And then you have the Jaguars, who go out and sack Jake Brissett 10 times.
The first team with
multi-10-sack
games in a year since the 84 Bears.
Yeah. I mean, that defense is legitimate. It's one of the reasons why you and I both had them playoff bound. But we keep wanting to not believe it. So we picked them to make the playoffs, but then we both keep thinking, nah, this isn't real.
Well, they're so inconsistent.
Oh, yeah. But this is what you're going to get with a team that's a bit up and coming.
I don't quite expect that. This is inconsistent is one thing, but the way the Jaguars play, when they win, they are romping. And when they lose, it's like, ugh, what was that?
They're definitely front runners. I mean, I think we'll both agree. I mean, this is not a team that we expect to come from behind very often, but when they get a lead, they don't let it go.
You want to stop talking about the Jags and the Rams, like we said, but when you look at it, the Rams are – I thought I clicked on NFC here. I was looking at point differentials earlier the day.
Plus 76,
and those two teams,
I believe. Yeah.
74 for the Rams,
Okay.
And 73 for the Jaguars. Those two teams lead the entire fucking NFL in point differential, the Rams and the Jaguars. And I don't trust either one of them. You know, I picked one of them to make the playoffs. I don't know what to say about it.
No, this
those
is just becoming...
Not the Chiefs.
Yeah. No,
everyone was blowing the Chiefs the first month of the year. Not the Chiefs. They're plus 46. Not the Eagles. Everyone says they're the best team in football. They're 6-1. They're only plus 53. The Jaguars are plus 73. The Rams are plus 74. Not those two teams. But there's no explanation for that. I'm sorry. There's just none.
Well,
and Blake Bortles
throwing
for 300 yards.
Yeah, with the without Leonard Fournette.
Yeah.
I mean, the Colts are bad. I mean, let's you know, we can't really mince any words there. The Colts are not a good team. But they've been showing some fight. You know, a lot of teams that were showing fight did not show up this late. The 49ers did not show any fight, and that was their mantra the last several games was, you know, just hang tough, but we're going to lose. The Colts were hanging around. They hung around against the Titans. They won a couple of games, and then they show up and they do that. And they let Jake Brisket just get absolutely annihilated in the pocket. And if he didn't roll his way out, he would have had four or five more sacks if he wasn't mobile.
Yeah, it was really bad. Well, the Pittsburgh Steelers showed a lot of fight in knocking off the Cincinnati Bengals, doing what they're supposed to do. So, no surprise, Bryson Brooklyn, welcome back to In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Your Steelers looking good.
it's like my timing is perfect, man. What's going on, guys? How you feeling?
Hey, we were looking for a wellness check for you after a while.
Yeah, we were looking for that wellness check after that Bears game.
Oh, man. So, you know, sometimes I don't get a chance to – depends on when I'm home if I can get on a show or not. But, no, I don't duck. Yeah. We could definitely talk about that. I mean, the two losses for Pittsburgh, even the Jacksonville Jaguar loss, I know you guys are just talking about the Jags, definitely respectable this year. Just very undisciplined football, bad coaching scheme, and guys not playing up to their potential. You know, they had to take those losses. Those were games. You know, the Jaguar game, I'll give you. You know, they came and they were ready. I still felt we could have played better. That Bears game, we had no business losing that football game. But, you know, it just kind of goes to show that when you don't coach them up every week, you get out of scheme, you're undisciplined against the run, that can happen to you. And it did. But overall, you know, Pittsburgh to me, as I said, is the clear number two in the AFC. I still think New England's number one because they're New England. But Pittsburgh is the clear number two, and then you can order it any way you want to after that.
Yeah, the Steelers looked real impressive against the Bengals. And I don't know how you saw that game, Bryce, but Cincinnati came out aggressive. They came out, obviously, intending to compete. And Andy Dalton actually played well the first half as well. But it's like the Steelers – They're slowly getting back to where they're supposed to be. You can tell Ben Roethlisberger is hooking up with his targets. You talked earlier a couple of weeks ago about Juju Smith-Schuster running some more routes and showing you a little more in the route tree. And he's getting his opportunities slowly but surely. But it looks like they're starting to put it all together finally.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at the team, I try to be sober-minded only because – you know, I think the team has the capacity to win a championship, but they have to do the things that they need to do to get past that team in New England. These other teams, I think, you know, you have to compete every week. We know that. But, guys, it comes down to when the time comes, can they beat number 12? And I think they've geared up the team that can hopefully play their best at the end to do that. You know, the Cincinnati Bengals, I tell people, don't trust the Bengals. We know them better than they know themselves. That team – people love to get enamored by them on paper. But when you start to examine that team, the way they match up with people, you know, right now it's not a team that's really built to withstand the injuries that Pittsburgh has gotten over the years, New England has gotten, but yet still be able to right the ship. It's not a winning culture over there. They really don't know. There are some fundamental things they've never been able to do against us. They can't run the football consistently. They can't establish the line of scrimmage consistently. we consistently run the football. Jerome Bettis once was quoted as saying, when you need to get the running game right, you play Cincinnati. that's a long time ago. So, you know, I mean, it's a good win, but I don't think that team is on the field as talented as people make them on paper. So let's see what we do secondary-wise against Matthew Stafford, who I think is twice as good as Andy Dalton will ever be. I think he'll be the best quarterback we face this year so far. We got to be ready because he can make all the throws. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, you had anything for Bryce, Jason? We missed him. We had a few weeks there. We were wondering we're gonna have to send out a search party for you.
We always get worried after those ugly Steelers losses. You know that the suicide watch is in a full effect. We know how much you love those Steelers, but no, I the way I see it with the Steelers is after Roethlisberger had that 5-interception game against the Jaguars, and everybody and their brother realized that team was built around Le'Veon Bell in the running game, they went back to it. They were smart enough to start featuring him more and not putting all the burden on Roethlisberger. He is, you know, we know what he is at this point of his career. He is statuesque in the pocket. He's a little, he was a gunslinger to some degree earlier in his career, but I don't think he's got that in him as much anymore. I don't think he's got the ability to force throws into tight windows like he could when he was younger, and we've seen him make some mistakes. So leaning on the running game is just going to make things easier for him, but that does for most quarterbacks. I mean, there's no quarterback's best – every quarterback's best friend is the running game, and the Steelers just happen to have one of the top, you know, two or three running backs in all of football, and they just need to feature him. That'll help them win a lot of games, I think, going into the fall and into the winter here. And I think they're in good shape. Nobody's going to go undefeated. You're going to go on the road. You know, Andre and I both had the Bears picked in that game. That felt like a classic trap for the Steelers.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Going out of conference on the road. You see this all the time. You know, the Jaguars, that one snuck up on us. We didn't see that bad of a performance from the Steelers, but that game was tight until all the interceptions started, you know, turning it around. So it ended up looking a lot worse than it was. And I fully expected them to stomp the Bengals. Although Vontaze Burfict did a little stomping of his own. Dre, didn't we just talk about Vontaze Burfict within the last week or so here about not being heard from or seen and not in a good way? And then he is heard from and seen, and of course, only the way he can, in the worst possible way. So we just come to expect this now. We called it.
I said it on the last show. It feels like every time there's a Bengals-Steelers game that it's time for Vontaze Burfict to do something to draw a suspension or a fine from the league.
Yep.
That's the timing that he has.
Yeah, he's a clown. But I will have to disagree on two points that were just made. One is that, you know, despite how bad Roethlisberger played against Jacksonville, and he has been pedestrian, I would say those first four or five games, a lot of it, I think he just was missing throws, but a lot of it, I think, falls on Todd Haley for not helping his quarterback getting him into a rhythm. I think Roethlisberger, when I watch him, he still can make every throw. I think his feet are still moving pretty well in the pocket. He's not as fast. So, but I just think the style of play has to be conducive to an organized offense. And this will go to my second disagreement, which is I think number 26 is the best tailback in the league. And when you have the best,
of course you think
you need to. Well, of course, but I think his talent and his numbers and production, you know, I think they bear that out as well. I think a lot of people would agree he's the best. Definitely the best all-around tailback. If you don't want to say pure runner, maybe you can make an argument for other people, but the best all-around guy, pass blocking, routes, catching, running, and the whole nine. So you have to feature an extreme talent like that, and that's fine because Roethlisberger is probably in style the closest thing to Elway we've seen, and Elway towards the end can still make the throws and move a little bit, but he had TD, and we've got Levy on, so let's feature him, and then let's, you know, I love the way Mike Tomlin talked about Martavis' situation today. It's like he ain't going nowhere. We ain't trading him. He wants the football more. I don't like the social media thing to call another teammate, but there's really nothing he said that's wrong in what he said, which is he is a more talented receiver than Juju. And a lot of it, again, I'm going to put on Todd Haley, who for some reason can't orchestrate an offense to get these number two, three guys more involved. Pittsburgh in 2001 had Cordell Stewart and ran the heck out of the ball and still had 2 1,000-yard receivers and a guy with 100 grabs. So they could do it. He needs to sit and figure out how to organize the offense to become more imaginative. It's amazing to me they can't get 10 to football. It doesn't make any sense. I'd be pissed too. So I have no problem with him acting. Now they're not trading him and he's not going nowhere. They'll deal with him and he's going to get better. And hopefully Todd can get these guys the football.
Well, Bell is running as well as he's ever run right now, as far as I'm concerned. And he is playing like the best back in football. And that'll definitely go a long way to keeping everything together.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, the defense, well, and in shape, man. I mean, Joe Hayden can still can play. I'm not going to say Joe Hayden's a top three corner, but Joe Hayden is a good, good corner. And Artie's coming up. They got the outside backers that are young. The defense is young and fast. It's harder to get yards in the air on Pittsburgh this year than it's been in a couple previous seasons. So let's see. This defense is coming into shape. Watch out for them.
We'll see what they do Sunday night against Detroit. Bryce, thanks for checking in.
Thanks, guys. Always good talking some football. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Always good to hear from Bryce in Brooklyn, the biggest Steelers fan in the world. He could spend the whole show breaking them down.
Yeah. You gotta love that, just the raw, unabashed homerism that we get from Bryce. But he loves his team. I mean, that's what we are not able to project that because we are trying to stay as even keeled as we can when it comes to picking these games, because the picking the games and love for our team, that's a dangerous, that's a slippery slope. You don't want to go there. You don't want to be, the super fans. If anybody remembers the Saturday Night Live skit with the Bear fans, the Bears, Bears going to win 88 to negative 10.
I could upload that too. Da Bears. Yeah, that's
Can't go there when we're talking, point spreads and betting the game and things along those lines. They're just trying to break down what we're seeing. I was on record. I don't think either one of us. I know Bryce was hammering on some people who think that the Bengals are all that, but you and I clearly are on record as not being those guys.
I had tendency to at least cover the number. No, I definitely have them out of the playoffs and getting their coach fired, and then you have them missing the playoffs as well. But I thought they were competing.
Because their coach should have been fired 2 years ago.
Correct. But I thought they would compete in this game and stay close, and they did compete, but in almost stereotypical Bengals fashion, the moment – the heat got to them, and the moment the Steelers started executing and playing well, they start getting chippy and dirty and losing their discipline. And discipline isn't just in the form of kicking guys in the head when they're lying on the ground. I'm talking about discipline in game as well, because they started committing some bad pass interferences on deep balls. They started leaving guys wide open. They weren't playing like that the whole game. They just started playing like that after the Steelers. Again, it's sort of like when a bully gets hit in the mouth, he starts shrinking backwards. That's what happens. The Bengals have been a bunch of bullies for years now, and once the Steelers started standing up for themselves and hitting them in the mouth, they started running in with their tails between their legs and becoming undisciplined and looking like a typical Marvin Lewis coach team, and that's on me. That's one of 10 terrible calls on me this week, so there's a lot of company there. But that was awful.
And you, I gotta say, you had two more losses staring at you that you avoided. With the Jets coming back to force a push, the Dolphins coming back to force a push on the Jets, the score didn't indicate it, but with 7 minutes left to go in the game, I still had the Packers in the points. With 7 minutes left to go in that football game.
That's right.
It could have been worse for you. You could have been looking at 2-11-1 this week. But instead you get a 3-10-2.
I really want to brag hard about the one game that was never in doubt that I won, which was against your lock of the week. But because the rest of my week was so shitty, I can't even brag that hard about it. But yeah, the Cowboys.
You know, and it's hard because I believe we both shit all over each other's locks of the week.
Mm-hmm. And they wound up getting shat on. shat over and shat on. And
yeah,
we both were correct in shitting on the other one's lock. So that it was one of those weeks.
But yeah, you both definitely had like that.
Oh yeah, you definitely outpaced me at 6-7-2 on the week. I was a putrid 3-10-2. The lofty week that I had earlier in the season and the percentage 7-27 after week three, and I am 5-35. What a tumble! You said I was going to come back to earth, and I didn't know it was going to be this hard this quick. Whew.
Yeah, it evaporates quick. This is I'm telling you, this is very humbling what we do. We know
life comes at you fast.
I mean, 500 is the gold standard. 500 or above is you're doing really well. You're still doing really well. It's just you started off so hot out of the gate. You know, there was nowhere to go. I mean, what is it? It's better to burn out than to fade away. You know, I guess we're trying to, you know, which one are you doing right now? Are you burning out or are you fading away?
This feels like a burnout as fast as I'm going down. 20 games over 500 after 3 weeks, down to 7 games over 500 now on the season. So I've lost 13 games over the last 4 weeks. All I can do is try to turn around. I know what I'm going to do in preparation for this week's picks and starting at the end of this live show when we have to pick the Thursday night game is I'm definitely going more statistical and analytical and trying to break things down on paper, because calling them like I've seen them in the air or what I've seen from each team over the air on television so far hasn't worked, because so many teams are so damn inconsistent. Yes, I'm putting all the blames on all the teams. It's all your fault for being inconsistent, NFL. All your fault why I can't pick these games anymore.
Ugh, and what a perfect gift for you for your first Sunday off.
Good God. Just some awful, awful football.
So did you wait a minute. Does that mean, I have to ask, does that mean you had to watch that Titans-Browns game?
That was so unappealing that I didn't watch the game. That was the only game in this market at noon Central Time. And instead of hunkering down on my first Sunday off, and I don't know how long, instead of watching the Titans and Browns fumble and stumble around to a 9-9 score and going to overtime, I actually chose to spend time with my wife, have a little late breakfast, and we watched a movie. We watched some movie called Girls Trip or Girls Vacation or something like that. One of those all-female ensemble movies for the black crowd. So, you know, it was basically Bridesmaids for black women, and it was all right. It was kind of funny. But that was my choice, was Titans football versus the Cleveland Browns, or a girly movie with my wife, and I chose the girly movie happily.
That's terrible. You got the first Sunday off in who knows when, in how long, mm-hmm. You can sit down and you can watch football, and the game that you have to watch is so putrid and unappealing that you watch
El Paso.
Wow.
I chose to take an El Paso on that, yeah.
You didn't miss much. I will tell you that. I
didn't think I was going
to. All I know is I won that pick. Don't ask me how. It was terrible. I actually was half expecting to blow that pick when that game went to overtime, in that I was expecting the Browns to do something so stupid that they let the Titans get a touchdown, so that would become a 6-point Titans win.
Like a lateral.
Yeah, so I was actually,
backwards that comes up being a fumble and the Titans pick it up and run it in or something.
Oh, yeah. Like Cam Newton threw. Just like that.
Just like that.
No, I half expected it to go that way. I found myself secretly wanting the Browns to just miss the field goal because I had the pick. Just miss the field goal at the end of regulation, you know, at that time frame to tie the game. And so, because I'm good. I had it. It was 9-6. I didn't need anything else. I didn't care about the outcome of the game. I just wanted to win the pick. And I'm glad I did because I sweated out a few of them, but that was definitely one of the ones that I sweated out. So at least there was some intrigue at the end of that. Because after the local broadcast game here was over and after that Packers-Saints game was over, I switched over to Red Zone. And because that game went to overtime, of course, it was getting quite a bit of coverage. And, what terrible football. And Cleveland they have no clue. They're going with their third starting.
He
should just get fired. Him and, just fire him. Third starting quarterback in 3 weeks. You put all three of those guys together, and you don't have one starting quarterback. Unless the Brownies have a bye this week, I have a feeling we're going to be highlighting them with Halloween coming up here.
Oh, is this Saturday going to be the Halloween show? Oh, that's right. It is coming up.
That's right.
I will. There is the worst team of the six on bye, I would say, is probably the Giants. So thankfully, we won't have to talk about them. And then Interception Santa coming back from England, they're on bye as well, so we'll get to avoid talking about them. So no, the Browns will be playing the Vikings on Sunday morning from London, your favorite, the old Sunday morning game. Game that nobody in their right mind should watch.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's pretty bad. Oh no, we've got some opportunities here. We could talk Colts Bengals on our next show.
Oh,
that'll be a good one.
Good God.
Oh yeah. This is gonna be
Atlanta
a fun show.
Jets might be
it's pretty bad that Falcons Jets could be in the discussion. Because we're not talking about good games this week. And that's sad because there are good games. Now people who don't know the format of the way that show works, we usually will do this sort of tongue-in-cheek picking the bad games in highlight, but then the games that we kind of gloss over after that we'll usually go back and revisit in a little bit more of a free-form way in the after show, so that it won't be a complete like we're not going to talk about the really good matchups this week. We will still do that. It'll just probably get pushed off into the after show.
But in deference to Halloween, we will pick the spookiest games of the week and make them the highlight games and break them down in greater detail. And then that'll serve as sort of the putting them to bed. Because after that, we're not going to talk the Jets much the rest of the season. We're certainly not going to talk the Browns much the rest of the season. And so that sort of serves as a way to sort of wipe the palate off of a handful of teams that we know are pretty much eliminated from the playoffs now, even though they're not mathematically eliminated.
It's almost, it's kind of a way for us to give a fitting send-off to teams that we just know that here on out, we're just not going to be given a whole lot of love to, unless they do something utterly ridiculous.
You want to contact the show if you're a Steelers fan or not a Steelers fan, it doesn't matter. We take any and all communication. You can send us an email at any time. You'll send that to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. You can send Jason a tweet at imldjtg. You can send me a tweet at imlddre. You can always check out our picks on the blog. The blog site is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. You're listening live on blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail. To listen to this show as a podcast, which means you get this live portion and an after show, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or any number of podcasting apps or websites. Or you can come back to the live show page and check out the archives. Yeah, I'm glad for Bryce to fill up 10 or 15 minutes talking about the Steelers, because that means less time that I have to spend talking about my 3-10 week. Which I'm glad to not have to discuss that as little as possible. 3 different teams get shut out. Blake Bortles, a 300-yard passing performance. John Fox once again authors a victory with his starting quarterback basically not there. He could have had 10 guys on the field on offense pretty much the entire day, as much as he used Mitch Trubisky, and they still find a way to beat the Panthers and handily at that. I don't know where else you want to go the rest of this breakdown show, but there's just so much stuff going on that I don't have any explanation for. I don't know what to make of half of the things that's going on in the league right now.
Yeah, that Bears-Panthers game was really weird, but I started thinking about it, and I realized, you know, especially after you saw the way that Trubisky was being hidden, but the defense was making all the big plays, isn't this the John Fox blueprint? I mean, is John Fox molding the Bears into one of those teams like he had with the Broncos, where he just, you know, the offense just get out of the way and let the defense make the plays? And it's starting to feel like this is the stamp that John Fox is putting on the team. He's setting football back four decades or more. Oof. But when you look at the team's talent, and they've clearly made the decision that the defense is where the talent much is much better, because they've been playing so much better on defense. This is what we're going to get. And they're hanging around.
Not only did John Fox author a game that reminded you of those old Broncos teams, but there's a game that we talk about in passing throughout the years because of how legendary it was for how ugly the quarterback play was. And that's a Panthers win back on Christmas Eve 2006. Where Chris Winkie threw 4 of 7 passes for 32 yards in that game, and that was the winning quarterback. So there
That's
was
that funny
game.
That you
there
bring
was
that up, because I actually brought that up in the intro while you were disconnecting and reconnecting, and I get into the intro and I was talking about the Chris Winkie game and the Bears pulling that out with Trubisky, because it was funny because they both attempted the same number of passes. I believe it was 7.
Trubisky,
in that game,
4 of 7 for 102 yards. Yes,
it's a I'll give you that. It's a hell of a yards per attempt.
This is true.
Like 14, 15 yards per attempt almost. That's pretty damn good.
So there's Winkie winning a game, completing 4 passes. There's Trubisky winning, completing 4 passes. The Trubisky win was the first time a quarterback won completing 4 passes or fewer since November 13, 2011. Tim Tebow was 2 of 8 for 69 yards in the touchdown as Denver knocked off the Kansas City Chiefs. I posted this article.
Was John Fox the head coach of all 3 of those teams?
I posted this article from NBCSports.com from Pro Football Talk on my Twitter. John Fox was the head coach, indeed, for all 3 of those games.
Holy crap. I didn't read the article, but when you said, you know, Winkie, Tebow, there is a blueprint. We're on to something here, although NBC Sports has clearly copped this before us, but it felt that way when I saw the result. I was like, yeah, this just feels like this is the John Fox way.
It's very familiar, isn't it?
It's horrible to watch. It's not compelling football. But when you look up scoreboard, I mean, that's it. That's you know, I mean,
scoreboard.
That's it. John Fox
knows how to win a game without having a quarterback on his roster that he trusts. That's a skill, I suppose.
Hello, you play to win the game.
That's all that matters. That John Fox won the game with a quarterback he didn't trust to throw more than 7 times. And, yeah, it's what he does. He's a defensive coach, and if you don't give him a quarterback that he believes in, he is going to rely on the defense and the running game and the hell with whoever the quarterback happens to be.
You were on – okay, so are you still on John Fox. Are you still on the John Fox is getting shit-canned after the season?
Yes.
Okay. You think they might want to bring in someone with a little offensive mindedness, is what you're saying?
I think they might want to bring in a coach who isn't a politician. That's my big thing with John Fox, is that he's always trying to get power behind the scenes and trying to move this piece over here, move that piece over there. And he's all about trying to make sure that he's still the kingpin and his lieutenants under him are in the correct place. He doesn't give a damn about the team, quite frankly. He's all about himself and trying to protect his bottom line and however many wins that he can get as a coach. That's all he cares about. That's why he does these things with these quarterbacks that he doesn't like or care about and goes out there and says, basically, do not throw the ball at all, and we're going to try to win without you. What other coach tries to do that? Fox has successfully pulled it off 3 times. But who else even tries to win a game in the NFL the way the NFL is set up today, where quarterbacks have so much power and so much ability to do whatever they want? When all else fails, just throw it up as high and hard as you can and try to get a pass interference call and try to turn the tide of the game, just like Tom Brady did on Sunday night. He doesn't even want that to happen. Just don't do anything, and I'm going to try to win the game using defense and running and nothing else. That's because John Fox cares about nothing but trying to win the game. And that's in one way admirable, but at the same time, I just feel like he's a selfish individual and is always out for trying to find the best angle to make John Fox look good and make John Fox's record look good, and nothing else matters. Trubisky probably needs to throw a hell of a lot more than that to develop as an NFL quarterback, because otherwise you can keep fucking Mike Glennon in there if you're going to have Trubisky drop back and hand the ball off to the running backs. What's the point
you
of playing?
You just totally stole my point, which is, why did they make the change again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, Trubisky's not out there just shitting the bed and throwing the dumb picks and not moving the offense, but he's not doing anything. 4 for 7.
Yeah, butt fumble go and do that.
And they won by 2 touchdowns.
Well, Eddie Jackson had a lot to do with that. But yeah, and I sort of talked about the Bears defense scaring me when I made that pick of Carolina. Yeah. And the Bears defense is kind of scary. They're right up there with New Orleans as far as making plays.
It's the only reason I picked them. Also, at home, they've been incredibly tough. I mean, you look at, they hung an L on the Steelers. They should have hung one on the Falcons. Yeah. They have been good enough. I'm not going to say good. I don't want to strain my credibility. You know, it's already hurting enough with the season I'm having here. They've been good enough at home to cover numbers and sneak out some wins. And here they go again. They matched their win total from last year in week 7.
That's not a big goal there. You saw, I'm assuming you saw the Packers-Saints game.
Yeah.
Trubisky with the 4 of 7, or Brett Hundley doing what he did, which was less impressive to you?
I was once again, I don't mean to pile on here, but I'm once again throwing this all completely on Mike McCarthy. That's a team, the Packers, that's winning at halftime, makes 0 adjustments, and played scared with their quarterbacks during the entire second half and fell back, and with Aaron Jones having had one hell of a game, again, a real running back. And what do they do in the second half? They go into this completely predictable play scared, run on first down, run on second down, throw on third down, punt. And that was the Packers' way of doing things. Almost the entire second half, there was no creativity to the offense. They didn't put Brett Hundley in motion. They didn't have him try to use any of his athleticism. It was, and Mark McCarthy after the game said it was all on him. He's like, hey, this is my guy. There's a reason why we've kept him around for 3 years, which was all of the points that I was making about why I liked the Packers moving forward with Brett Hundley. And I saw a team that coached scared and deserved to lose that game, even though with 7 minutes left to go, they were still up by 2.
Yeah. And the Saints, the way I saw those highlights was that it looked like Aaron Jones and Brett Hundley both started well, and then the Saints veterans finished the game. They took over and Hundley couldn't answer back. Some of those throws he was making was like, what are you doing? What?
But a lot of the throws that he was making were in predictable passing situations. Exactly the thing that I talked about the week before about what happened when they put him in against the Vikings and they fell into this rut. You can't put a basically rookie. No, he's not a rookie, but he's starting his first game. He's right. Pretty much a rookie, even though he's been in the league. He's learned behind Aaron Rodgers, but he's basically just played a lot of practice. He's running with the twos a lot, or the threes, or on the practice squad. You cannot put guys that are trying to survive, you know, playing for the first time in predictable passing situations, especially, I mean, the Saints defense isn't great, but man, the Packers made them look great because, it was basically telegraphed, here's what's coming. I'm putting that on coaching.
All right, fair enough. I definitely agree with you. You can't have a first-time starter and someone with that little experience in a situation where a defense can pin its ears back and just get after you because they know it's a passing down. You have to avoid that. You have to be more creative than that. And you're long on record with your criticism of Mike McCarthy, the coach. And there it is, rearing its ugly head again.
They make no halftime adjustments. They just don't.
Man.
I think you see a team that comes out looks good early, and you know that's during that scripted phase. They, you know, and it seems like once they get past that scripted phase, if it wasn't Aaron Rodgers getting teams to jump off sides or catching them with 12 men on the field, or you know dancing around in the pocket, you know because the crappy offensive line broke down again, so that he could make some miracle throw down the field, that was their offense. I've been on record as well about the lack of sustainability in that offense. And we were both on record this year basically saying Aaron Rodgers is a ticking time bomb waiting to get killed.
Yeah, it's really sad because they've got the talent to compete every year.
Yeah. In a league now that's starved for quarterback play, we just lost Aaron Rodgers, Carson Palmer. It looks like we had lost Derek Carr to a broken back. You got teams not scoring, you know, eight teams didn't score more than 10 points. Three teams got shut out. It's not pretty right now.
So starved that the Dolphins had to go get Jay Cutler out of retirement. Now they've lost him. So
yeah. And then their offense completely turns around after he gets hurt.
Speaking of Jay Cutler and the Miami offense.
Nice segue there.
That's called it. Thank you. Turning around under Matt Moore once he got under, leading a comeback victory over the Jets to get a backdoor push, and I was very grateful for that.
You needed
it. Dolphins, I did. Now the Dolphins get on a plane, make the trip on the short week to Baltimore to take on the Ravens on Thursday Night Football. Wide receiver injuries. Looks like Devontae Parker may return for the Dolphin game. Looks like Jeremy Maclin may return for the Ravens. They're both sort of game-time decisions. Mike Wallace got concussed on Sunday. He probably won't play, but they haven't announced that yet. The Dolphins are 4-2, 2-1 on the road. The Ravens are 1-2 at home, and the cop-out line is in effect. Miami +3 at Baltimore. Jason, who you got?
Well, it's hard to think that if the Dolphins win this game, they'll be 5-2. As shitty as everything had gone for that team, we could be looking at a 5-2 Dolphins team, and that's what I'm going to pick. Matt Moore looked like the more deserving quarterback on the field after Jay Cutler got hurt. He looked like he's been there. He looked like he knew the offense, had a concept of what he wanted to do, and I got the sense that he was motivated. I got the feeling that he wanted the job all along. It's like, hey, guys, it should have been me. I think he's playing so that Jay Cutler doesn't come back. I'm going to take the Dolphins straight up.
A little bit on the narrative and what you see on the field for that pick. I'm, like I said, going to the analytics and seeing if I can break things down that way since it's been so terrible for me lately. We'll try this. The last three games, the Miami pass defense has gone from giving up 8.2 yards per catch to 7.3. They've shored that up very nicely. The Ravens are running a little worse down in running and also giving up a little more in the ground game. They are now last in the league in run defense, in yards per game. I will agree with you and take the road team Miami Dolphins on the road on the short week over the Ravens. More on our after show when we come back. And now into the VIP after show program. Yeah, all the trends to me look like they're going for the Dolphins and against the Ravens, and Joe Flacco continues to be an awful, awful quarterback, which makes me feel a little better about this pick as well.
And let's not forget the last time we saw Matt Moore was his dumplings moment in the playoff game against Pittsburgh, the game he never should have come back into. But up to that point, was playing very well.
That's true.
So
who knows what he's got in the tank?
And immediately he came into that game and threw a pick six, puts them down 14, and still brings them all the way back. So it's like he gets the rust off, but I saw downfield action. I know the team was losing, but if Jay Cutler was out there and they were down by 14, he still would have been throwing 5 yards. He was very comfortable with Adam Gase, apparently, throwing nothing but checkdowns and 5 yard throws. And Matt Moore was out there. He was dealing. He had a hell of a game. He looked motivated. I can see that he's basically playing. He's playing for money. You got to figure, even if they're not going to have him be the starter going forward, he's playing for somebody. In this league, Matt Moore could probably start for quite a few teams.
In this league, no doubt about that. And the thing about Cutler under Adam Gase is I was one of the people thinking that Cutler would have some success under Adam Gase because of what he did in Chicago. And because what they did, this is a lot of what they did in Chicago, was a lot of shorter throws. And I was excited about it because those shorter throws resulted in less mistakes and less interceptions and less bad Jay Cutler play. Well, what's happened is everyone's adjusted over here in Miami, and those shorter throws are still happening, but they're getting stopped and there's nothing else going on. There's nothing opening up later on downfield for Cutler. And then the bad mistakes come anyway, even though he's throwing shorter, everyone is adjusting to that and playing tighter and playing up, and the receivers aren't able to get the separation that they need to get. And those mistakes are still being made by Cutler, who, as much as I try to defend him, we both have tried to defend him, he will still make some mistakes for you if you give him the opportunity. And I've always admitted that, too. It's not like I've been completely blind to what Jay Cutler is as a quarterback. I've just tried to let everyone know to be fair and see that he does a lot of good things as well. He was a good, sometimes very good, NFL quarterback for a number of years. But he's also very mistake prone, and we saw that with Miami. So you sound like you think Matt Moore is about to go on a little bit of a run. And if we're both right on this pick, like you said, I would put Miami at 5-2. They're going to be primed for another playoff spot if Matt Moore does make another run, like you say he will. It was surprising they made the playoffs last year, and they might do it again this year.
I believe we both had them in the playoffs this year. So that would be that,
you
had
them in
right?
the playoffs this year.
I don't think I did. Okay, all right. I did. I had them. I had the Dolphins and the Jaguars as my wild card teams. So, all
right.
All right. Hey, 5-2, and playing as bad as we've seen them play, and winning ugly. I don't think anybody's winning more ugly than the Dolphins and the Titans right now.
Oh my goodness!
That is straight up winning ugly, and you appreciate that term being a White Sox fan, but that is,
of course,
that's what we're seeing. But the Titans are 4-3, right? They're in it.
I watched the overtime of that. Like I said, I skipped the whole regular part of that game, but it was on. Football was on, and I
because you were probably expecting the late. You were probably expecting the afternoon game, but overtime was on.
I was getting ready for the 3:30 games. It was almost like a reflex if it's 3 o'clock, I got to turn on the late games, because in our old age, we remember when the late games didn't start at 3:25, they started at 3 o'clock, and it didn't matter if the early games were still on, it was time for the late games to start. They all started at 3 o'clock. So yeah,
and
at
if
about
the early
3 o'clock,
game went to overtime. You missed the first quarter of the late game.
That's right. So I sort of instinctively turned on the TV at 3 o'clock to get ready for the late games, even though I knew that the late games weren't necessarily starting at three. They spread those out. Some of them started at three. Some of them started at 3:15. Some of them started at 3:25. So they really
3:25. You got it.
They really spread those start times around. But no, I watched the overtime of the Titans Browns, and the only impression that I got is not a good one for the Titans. The only impression I got was, wow, the Browns really can't stop the run. I don't know if they were doing that all game, but the Browns have one thing going for them from what I could see, and that is they do seem to be pretty stout up front on defense. So that's something. They got one thing going for them, which is nice. But the only good thing I can say about the Browns.
Okay, sure.
I'm just telling you, that's the only impression I got watching that overtime.
So otherwise, it's taken us this long.
Trash.
We waited till the after show to finally bring this up, but my quest to shit all over the season of the Philadelphia Eagles failed miserably.
Yeah.
And I did not stop the train. I couldn't do it. And now that team is 3.5 games clear of the whole division, and we're in week 7.
That division is over.
Poof.
But. Wow. What does that mean about the Eagles? What are your honest impressions of the 6-1 Philadelphia Eagles, who are getting talked up this week by many, many, many people as the best overall team in football?
But they're gonna say that just because they're 6-1 and everybody else is 5-2. So they're the only one loss team. So therefore, they must be the best team in all of football. I don't know. I mean, they've played well. I don't know. I mean, in the NFC, I guess anything is possible. I mean, I'm looking at the standings right now for the NFC. I mean, you just look at the teams and where they are. You know, the South is crap. The West is a mess. You know, we basically have that's a two-team race now between the Rams and the Seahawks. Oh, my God. And the North, you know, I hate to say that I was on board with the Vikings and they're going to sort of win this division now by default, but you got to figure the Packers are going to slide. The Lions aren't that great. I don't think the Bears are going to present a real challenge to the Vikings. So we're starting to see a playoff picture emerge. I don't think Drew Stanton's going to make the Cardinals relevant. That's why, I mean, we're talking, you know, other than the South, where I think that's the most wide open division in the NFC, you know, there's only a 2-game spread from first to worst. Everybody's kind of clumped together. You know, there's deep, deep flaws with every single one of those teams in the South, the Saints, the Panthers, the Falcons, the Bucks. All of those teams have problems, but all of them also have, you know, high highs. That's the division where teams have these incredible highs and these incredible lows. And
I was just about to say, team in that division has a hell of a ceiling as well.
Right. So everybody, I don't think we're going to really see that even start to take shape for the next 5 or 6 weeks. We're probably going to be the other side of Thanksgiving before we even really start to get a sense of the South. Cause unless somebody just goes on an amazing run and puts distance between them and the rest of the division, which I don't see happening because of how clustered everybody is together, I guess you have to give it to the Eagles. I'll at least say right now they look like the best team in the NFC. And I would put the Vikings as a very close second, with the Rams, I guess the way they've played, maybe right behind them. I hate to give it to the Rams, but maybe they'd be higher if either one of us had any trust in them. Well, I don't trust the Rams. I don't trust Jared Goff. We don't know what we're going to get. Their coach is, you know, just hit puberty. I'm interested to see what we're going to get out of the Rams going forward, but I trust the Eagles and the Vikings a little bit more. And I may go back and forth between my 1 and 1A or 1 and 2 there with the Eagles and the Vikings, because with the Vikings, we know what they're bringing. We know they are bringing punishing defense. They're just going to suffocate people. And they may long-term, I think, have an inside track as we start to get into the weather here. I don't know how much I trust the Eagles. I tried to end it. I was unsuccessful. But I will give it a toss-up right now between the Eagles and the Vikings as the best team in the NFC. I won't go all of football because I do think the Chiefs are really good. The Steelers are really good. I don't want to disagree with Bryce in Brooklyn. You know, he'll bring the pain if we disagree with him. But I don't think that the Patriots have the track record, but this year the Patriots are not the best team in the AFC to this point. So even though they're 5-2, that's a tenuous 5-2. I actually do trust the Chiefs and the Steelers both a little bit more than the Patriots right now. So I'd go, you know, Chiefs, Steelers, Patriots, Eagles, Vikings, Rams. Oh God, that hurt. Boy, that really hurts to say.
I know. But I know how much you talked on the last show about how much you hate the Eagles. So I definitely wanted to give you your forum to get into the Eagles and a fair assessment of what Philadelphia actually is.
This is why I don't watch pregame shows, because they do one of these fluff pieces on Carson Wentz before the game about him and this little kid who died of cancer. And damn it, I liked him just a little bit more when it was over.
Ah, see, that's why they do it. They get that humanity going, and now you want to root for him.
Here's the problem is I'm standing there and I'm watching this and I'm like, well, you know, because of being a parent or anybody who's just got a heart, you know, and you're just watching this and it starts getting to you and you're watching it, you get it, and just like, and I realize this is not the thing, is I know it's happening. I'm like, God damn you, ESPN. I know what you're doing to me right now, but I hated him a little bit less.
That's when it was one of those pieces to humanize the gladiators.
Yeah. And then he goes out and balls out against the Redskins. That throw that he made to the running back in the end zone, to that Clement kid. You know, it's the play I'm talking about. I mean, he's got like three dudes hanging on him. He's dancing around. He's about to just get annihilated. And I don't know how he sees anybody, but just in a split moment, sees this guy on this flashing on this sort of like, you know, running back sort of wheeling out on this go route into the end zone, into the corner, and just flicks the ball out there perfectly and then gets crushed and ball just drops in for the touchdown. I was like, wow. I mean, that was one of the most impressive throws I've seen. I mean, maybe not just this year. I mean, that's one you remember.
That's what makes me like him a little more, other than not the fluff.
I watched the fluff. Yeah. He played. I give it to him. He played really well.
That was his second best play of the night. That Houdini act to not go down on the blitz and run for 17 yards that he did later on. I couldn't believe what I was watching there. That was demoralizing, man, because the Skins were trying to compete and hang in there, and then that happened.
That one stung you because you were trying to get the Redskins to stay within the number.
It was a game. They were competing, and then that drive happened. That play was followed by great throws to Alshon Jeffrey, Zach Ertz, and the touchdown to Nelson Agholor. That's where they started doing the MVP chants in the stadium, and I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. This is just... Yep. Oh, so just a perfect cap to my weekend there.
But think about the really good quarterback play that we saw this last week. Just think about it for a minute. Carson Wentz, Alex Smith, Blake Bortles,
not that one.
Jared Goff. I mean, Derek Carr. I mean, you know, only one of those guys is a veteran. And Derek Carr's only in his third or fourth year. Alex Smith's the old guy of that group. Maybe we're slowly starting to see that next generation. I mean, Dak Prescott, you know, we're still slowly starting to see that sort of next generation of quarterbacks coming up. because it was all on display right there this last week.
Now, it's all about the consistency, of course, because how many more 300-yard games do you see Blake Bortles having in his career?
But just the fact that his name was in the conversation, he didn't go 4-7 in the game.
No, he didn't. Well, guess what? If Trubisky was playing against the Colts secondary, he would have thrown more than seven times.
He might have.
Those guys,
he might have.
I would have been open against the Colts secondary. They were leaving everyone wide open.
Yeah, because when the Colts are only seven games in and their point differential is -103,
woo,
that's worse
and
than
that's
Cleveland.
A team well, that's how fucked up the NFL is this year. That's a team we talked specifically about how they compete. -103.
Well, this is why you went 3-10 and I went, you know, and I'm where I am.
Oh, God.
They've won two games.
I know.
They've won two games. They're giving up over 30 points a game, easily, well clear of giving up 30 points a game in Indy. But they've won, you know, they've won more games, you know, than they've won two more games than Cleveland. They've won two more games than San Francisco. They've won a game more than the Giants. All those teams statistically, even just point differential wise, at least, are much better than -103. So when the Colts lose, they really lose. They lose bad.
They've always forgotten, or at least it seems like to me, always forgotten guy when we talk about quarterbacks in the NFL, the guy that already has a ring but seems to sort of fall under the shadows is the man up in the Pacific Northwest who led his team off the bye to a victory over the Giants where they were not looking very impressive and all of a sudden sort of exploded for a bunch of points. Russell Wilson.
Paul
another loss,
Richardson.
Another loss
That's
by
all you
me.
Need to know. Paul Richardson.
Time for another version of What is a Catch? It feels like a game show every week. Well, I don't know what the fuck a catch is anymore. Although that was very much like the Fail Mary play with the two guys that have possession and the referee sort of going, I don't know. What did you see? I don't know. I don't. What did you see? I don't know. Touchdown! Yeah! Yeah, touchdown. He had clear possession. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Whatever.
Yeah.
No idea.
But
it's almost as bad as some of the umpires guessing at balls and strikes. You don't know. You're just guessing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of these where the catcher's just blocking the plate. I mean, the guy can't even see the ball all the way in. But, yeah.
Strike.
Are you doing a little Enrico Palazzo there?
Yeah, we'll have to get that in the queue as well.
But yeah, that was another one I was on board with because, but that was a game that was in question for at least for the first half, and then the Seahawks just slowly started pulling away. But Russell Wilson's still running for his life. Do you trust them?
Trust is a hard one. I almost feel like I have to. Again, it's easy to forget. That's my Super Bowl champ. That's the team I picked to actually win the fucking ring this year. And it looked like they were destroying the Giants in the first half, but all those drops and miscues by Seattle is what seemed to keep it close, and then they get the touchdown that they didn't actually catch. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
But it's every highlight and every play I see of the Seahawks on offense is Russell Wilson running for his life and no running game.
Seattle was because Russell Wilson was healthy enough to run for his life. I know the offensive line is still shit. I know they can't block for him. I can see that. But because he can actually fend for himself with his feet, it's the only reason I picked Seattle to have some success.
Okay, but fair enough. Did you see that Jimmy Graham? Did you see that drop that Jimmy Graham had?
Those drops, multiple.
Oh, my.
That's what was keeping New York around.
Yeah, your quarterback.
He had a couple of them.
Breaks contain. gets out and floats. And again, Russell Wilson, I will give him all the credit in the world. When he breaks out of the pocket, he is looking for the home run. We've talked about this with Deshaun Watson, very similar quarterbacks. Although Watson's got much more of an arm. But Russell throws that really pretty deep ball, and he throws one down the field to Jimmy Graham. Hits him
wide open,
right in stride, right, you know, right, but kind of like right on his hip. All he's got to do is just catch and turn, and he starts. You know, that's what happens. You start running with the ball before you've caught it, and that's why when I remember watching that Bears-Packers division winning game for the Packers when Aaron Rodgers threw that fourth down bomb to Randall Cobb where he was so wide of the Bears cover zero. That's the fear. Somebody's that wide open, you see a lot of those get dropped.
Yeah, you just get nervous and you it's floating right into your hands and there's nobody around and you're sort of thinking about the Madden cover and the groupies after the game and all the interviews and oops, you didn't look the ball into your hands.
Well, I know what's, but here's the thing that you're thinking when the ball, when you're that wide open and you can't believe you're that wide open, you start having the thoughts, don't drop it, right? And then you drop it because you're not thinking as a guy trying to do his job anymore. You're thinking as a guy trying not to fuck up.
Having never been that wide open, I also think maybe a little bit of it's the NFL and there are so many fast athletes around. You're looking around wondering, am I not seeing somebody about to come absolutely murder me? Am I really this wide open? Is somebody about to come clean my clock or what?
Yeah, but how often do you see it? We see it in every sport where there's that guy who will make the amazing play and then just totally screw up the routine one. I believe that was Sean Dunston when I was growing up. Right.
Yeah. Don't let him. Don't let him have too much time when he feels that ball at shortstop, because he is guaranteed to bulldog it right into the grass.
Yeah, or throw it, you know, 12 rows up into the seats.
No, that would be Mike Caruso on the other side of town. Oh.
But yeah, there's those guys. Devontae Adams has had that reputation up here in Green Bay. As being that guy who will go up and make the circus catch, but if he's wide open, he's going to drop it.
Mm-hmm.
Packers have got the drops these too. Martellus Bennett has been pretty useless since he's gotten here. When balls are thrown his way, he's putting them on the ground.
Well, we talked about Amari Cooper the first month of the year, and he
through 6 weeks, that was Amari Cooper. I mean, Amari Cooper had that one. Was that against the Titans where it was right there on the goal line and he just quick slant and just whoops. It just pretty much looked like he was batting it towards the ground, like he was playing defense.
Had a ton of them. I believe he was leading the league in drops before Thursday night. He may still be.
He made up for it a little bit. The Raiders still have some work to do here. What about I didn't catch a lot of it. What's going on with the Broncos, man? Wow.
You want me to answer that one? I can't answer for that.
Didn't Trevor Siemian, after two games, look amazing?
Yeah, he did. And probably was getting a lot of, maybe not MVP talk, but getting a lot of the hype that some of the guys get after some of these games where it's like, okay, just rein it in. He's not quite that good. I know he's had some impressive performances, but he's not quite that. So it also doesn't help that he's one of the best possession receivers in football. Emmanuel Sanders was not playing in that game. And everyone sort of has new roles when you have him go down. Everyone else has to fill in and do things that they're not used to doing. And it looked like Siemian didn't play well from the highlights that I saw, but he didn't have a lot of help. So it wasn't all on him. And I think just like he shouldn't have gotten as much credit as he did for those first few wins of the season, he also shouldn't be getting blamed as much for the bad play lately. I think his talent around him isn't as good as I think people think it is. Demaryius Thomas is a very good wide receiver. Emmanuel Sanders is a very good wide receiver. Everybody else around him is sort of like, they can have good games and they can have bad games. And the running attack has been inconsistent as well, because TJ Anderson and Jamal Charles were a very good tandem the first few weeks of the year, and they've fallen off as well. That's going to be another stat of my little comparison stats of what these teams have been doing in the last 3 weeks, where they're trending is going to be a big part of my show on Saturday night. So you've been forewarned, everybody.
We're at that point in the season where you start to go stat happy. So it's okay.
And I need to, after what just happened this past week, I need to go stat happy because this is ridiculous. But that'll definitely be part of it, as the Broncos are trending the wrong way on all of their offensive numbers, and they weren't that good to begin with. So it shouldn't be all that surprising, but I don't think they're this bad either.
I don't need to see the numbers to know that the Broncos are trending the wrong way on offense.
It shows up on the screen as well.
I'd be stunned if the numbers didn't support that. I'm looking for the numbers that tell the story that you don't expect. The numbers that I think are the important ones are the ones that go against what we're seeing or what we're thinking. We know the Broncos offense has been shitty, so I expect those numbers to be bad. I'll be interested to hear the numbers that maybe tell a different story than what we've been thinking. Or maybe some teams that we've been wrong on and the numbers actually do bear that out. Those are the stories I'm looking more forward to than the ones we know, like, oh, you know, the Colts defense is shitty and the numbers bear it out. Oh, really?
Well, I mean, for me, it's, I got to get back to the basics. That might be self-evident, but I sort of need to reinforce that for myself. So those are just as important as the ones that might be surprising to me.
Yeah, well, yeah, because then you want that, you know, sometimes you'll want that affirmation that, well, you know, right. Maybe I, but, you know, numbers are what they are. Because you could get affirmation, though, on a team that we've still been picking wrong, because you could have all the numbers in the world and somebody can still go out there and blow a spread. You know, if we were picking straight up, it would be a lot easier.
I don't know about a lot easier.
It would be a lot easier. But this year, no. This year, picking straight up would even be a chore.
How many more yards of offense did the Panthers have over the Bears and still found a way to lose by 14 points?
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those. Don't look at the box score. Don't look at that box score.
There's no predicting that. Cam Newton would let the Bears win playing like that. That was a perfect Cam Newton loss, because he pulls that off sometimes where he just looks like he doesn't want to be there. And it's like, what are you doing out there? So. There's no predicting sometimes some of these teams. I don't know what he's going to do from week to week. I don't know what Joe Flacco is going to do. None of the numbers that I study is going to answer why Cam Newton and Joe Flacco and, to an extent, Ben Roethlisberger and some of these guys have been so inconsistent this year. That's just, you just sort of throw your hands up and wait for these guys to sort of emerge as the season goes on and start playing the way they're supposed to play.
And we're not even at the halfway point yet.
Can I brag about a couple of things? We're close up there. Brag about a couple of things that I said correctly. I said that Minnesota would have success against Baltimore because you can run it up the gut, except I said the wrong guy. I said Jerick McKinnon could run it up their gut and have a lot of success, and it wasn't him. It was Latavius Murray going right up the middle with nobody around him. The Ravens are not the old Ravens. They are not defending the run the way they used to do. They're still decent against the pass, but they're soft in the middle right now. I don't know if they're going to be able to fix that.
Yeah, that was another one of those. That was a game where the Ravens hung around for a long time in that game too, but you just watch the Vikings, just like the Vikings did against the Packers the week before, they just wear you out. It's not pretty. They're not flashy. But got to give all the kudos in the world right now to the Minnesota Vikings. They're doing it without their starting quarterback, without their rookie running back, and they're doing it without Stephon Diggs. And they're still winning games.
They're having success at home. They're holding up. The defense is really holding up their end. They're going to get some more games on the road. They've had a home schedule sort of slanted their way early in the year. That was their fifth home game already this season.
Yeah, they've only had two on the road.
We'll get to see what they're made of as they start going on the road more. And then what does tanking look like? Here's what tanking looks like. Tanking looks like the Jets having a 28-14 lead on the Dolphins and finding a way and knocking the starting quarterback out of the game at the same time and still finding a way to get a push and lose the game straight up. Now that's not a win for me, but nonetheless, that's what I said. The Jets were going to start tanking after this Patriots game. And that's exactly what they did. They went up 28-14 on Miami and still found a way to lose the game. Because when you tank, that's what happens. Even when you turn in a good effort, you find a way to, hello, you play to lose the game. That's what happens when you tank. So good job out of the Jets for finding a way to lose.
31-28 is not quite a tank job.
28-14 lead and losing is a tank job. That's how you tank. It's not always getting destroyed.
Well, right, but it wasn't
tanking
like they didn't show up. They showed up. They showed up. They were present. It was a push. So it was the outcome was exactly what it should have been, right? I mean, it was basically it was a zero when it all ends up being said and done. But yeah, being up 28-4, that interception that Jake McCrown threw at the end of the game to give the oh my God,
you could play the Benny Hill music for that one. It was terrible.
It was hideous. That is going to be one that I'm filing away in the memory bank for possible worst play of the year. In that situation, to throw a ball that badly, and we've had a lot of plays that could go down as worst play, but that stands out.
That play is also what tanking looks like. Thank you very much.
Inside your 10-yard line, you're just looking for anything right now. I'm not even listening to you. Inside your own 10-yard line. I mean, you went 3-10 last week. Shut up.
I'm talking about what I did right. That one, I told you they're going
to
tank.
It only took you an hour and a half into the show. I'll give it to you, I guess.
It's all about me.
That's right. Took you 90 minutes to find that glimmer. God, hey.
There's so much that I could talk about that I did wrong. I'm just trying to
slow clap.
Thank you for the slow clap. Yeah, I heard that. There's so much terrible that I did. I'm just trying to talk about the little bit that I did correct.
All right. Because you can't stop. You can't stop yourself.
I can't help it. I got to talk about the few things that I did correct.
Hey, we have a radio show. We got to at least pat ourselves on the back, right? Even when we go 3-10, even when I have shitty weeks, I find something good, you know, in it. You have to, because if you don't, you'll just cry and be like, what am I doing? What am I doing this for? But, yeah, inside your own 10-yard line, to throw a ball that badly thrown, you're just watching this in slow motion. It was like watching a train wreck. That's what the Jets are. That's not tanking. That's the train wreck. That's what we keep waiting for. You know, I know you've got your, there it is.
Off the rails.
There it is. Escape the ground for you.
That's what it was. Giving me the great push, and I'll take it. Because it's all about me.
You know, how often on this show do we talk about sometimes a push is a win? That's exactly what we're talking about when we talk about a push being a victory. Sometimes you just have to pull a push from the jaws of defeat. You don't have to win. You just have to not lose.
That's all you have to do. Do you have anything else about this wonderful week before we put a bow on it?
Wonderful. I know you're being sarcastic. It was pretty bad. I mean, I hate to say, we've been saying this a lot this season about the quality of play that we're seeing on the field. I'm even starting to hear. Did you hear the Monday night guys talking about it at all? Did you watch any of the pregame?
No.
I had it on at work, so it's not like I choose to, but I had it on at work, and you're starting to hear. Like the Steve Youngs and those guys that are all up there and whatever you think of those guys, but they're talking about the legislation of physicality out of the game, and the legislation of practice and how these guys, they can't hit in practice. They have to have a certain amount of, that they're basically in a game that requires precision, creating a ton of imprecision, and we're seeing a lot of just bad football, bad defense, bad quarterback play. And I was surprising to hear that a lot of the ex-players are saying that it's the rush to safety. They're like, it's a dangerous game. You're never going to... It's almost like they're making it worse by trying to make it more safe. And that's an interesting point. I don't even know if they're making it more safe. When you see the amount of injury that we're seeing, the concussion protocol thing and all that, I completely get. But they were really on this with the physicality even being either legislated out through the rules or through the CBA. And when the commentators are telling you you're watching a crap product, you got to start to think about it.
So I'm not surprised that that's the tack that the players would take, because they're players. They're the ones that choose for a living to run their heads into each other and give each other CTE.
Like the guy who's going to die on the field for the Jets.
Yes. Jamal Adams. I'm not surprised at all that that's the tack that they would take. As far as making the games, is it making the game safer, legislating all that? I think I've said this on the show. There's only one thing, as far as I'm concerned, that's going to make the game safer, and that's removing helmets and making it so that you can't run headfirst into somebody else, or else you'll pretty much kill yourself instantly on the field. Although some guys are dumb enough to try to do that. But there's no way you're going to make the game safer. The game is unsafe the way it is now, and it's always going to be unsafe, especially as guys get stronger and faster over the years. They're not going to get slower in 2030 or 2040. The game's going to be faster then than it is now, if you can imagine it. But that's how evolution happens. So you're not going to make it safe, and they don't really care to make it safe. They're only legislating all of these rules because they're scared to death of all the lawsuits that former players are bringing in their families. And they're trying to do something where they can point and go, see, we tried to improve. We tried to improve the game. See, look over there. Look at the penalty for grazing Tom Brady's helmet barely and totally turning the tide of a game potentially. See, we tried to make it safer. There's no way to make it safer.
We had another roughing the passer call on a sack this week too.
Oh, that's not a surprise.
Yeah, that was, and it wasn't roughing the passer, it wasn't illegal. It was just a big hit.
Football.
But it wasn't dirty. And it was a sack, and they called roughing the passer. Oh, okay. So I love that. And then the one highlight from the, talking about just but the stupidity and the players even sometimes playing stupid, causing the injury. There was the highlight this week, and I can't remember who the guy was. Was it Landry? Who was the guy who jumped over the defender? I think that was in the Miami game, right?
Oh, Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, who jumped over the Jets defender. And when you watch that play, especially when they slow it down and they show that, like, sort of from the sideline view of him jumping over the guy, do you know what you see him jumping over? You see him jumping over a Jets player with his head completely down, pushing forward like he's trying to tackle the dude with his head, the top of his head. That's what they – there it is right there. That's what – first of all, it's what allows your dumbass to get jumped over, because you're looking at the ground and you don't have your head up trying to make a tackle. So tackling is also part of the problem, is these guys just don't go out and tackle correctly. You don't tackle with the top of your head.
You do if you're a Jet and you're tanking. See what I did?
Oh, boy. Oh, it hurts.
I'll stop the pain. But no,
what if the Jets had lost by two and I won that pick? Would you still be patting yourself on the back?
Not nearly as loudly.
Okay. That one point makes a whole difference, huh?
Yes. Okay. When you're 3-10, are grasping.
I get it. I've been there. I've been there. But that's the thing, is this year you were doing so awesome. I was just doing this one game below 500, two game below 500 thing. You went all in this week, my friend.
More like all out.
You don't want to, yeah, don't start piling those up. There's some good advice for you. Don't start throwing up too many 3s and 10s. Those are ugly. Those hurt. We've both been there. We've been there many times. You just when you sit there and you go, if I had just flipped all my picks, I'd be a superstar.
If I'd have just seen Blake Bortles throwing for 300 and the Jaguars running for almost 200 without Leonard Fournette.
With Chris Ivory.
And TJ Yeldon with all his mid.
That I did not get a chance to talk about. I saw that when I looked at the box score. I was like, yeah, I didn't realize TJ Yeldon was still in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And there he is.
On the scene.
Yeah, he's zombie running backs now.
No explanation. None whatsoever. I have nothing else to say about this week. I'm putting it to bed. I'm done with
it. Okay, I'm done too. We'll start week 8 in a couple days.
Yes. Need a fresh start as quick as possible. So we're looking at Saturday night at 9 at the moment?
Yeah, as far as I know. I don't see any reason why not. Friday would actually not be a good night for me this week because I'm off on Friday, so I actually have a Friday home. So I'd actually almost prefer to do it Saturday. So Saturday night, 9 p.m., I'll be there.
Oh, Dodgers 3-1 win tonight, go up 1-0 in the World Series on the Astros.
Almost, but that's expected. It's Kershaw.
Yep.
Now the series starts.
Now the series starts for real. So, yeah, spooky show coming up on Saturday, the Halloween special where we highlight some of the teams that are at the bottom of the league and get to give them their scary, spooky highlight. So we'll
their send-off.
Always have fun with that. It's their send-off into the wilderness. No church in the wild for those teams. He is Jay. I am Dre. I've been in much less detail of the podcast. Thank you all for listening to our bitching about this terrible, terrible week 7. Well, mostly my bitching.
The horror.
And we'll be back to... We'll try to rectify the situation and do much better coming up on Saturday night, 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern, as we pick the rest of week 7 in the NFL. We will talk to you then.